The important mitzvah in this week's parasha is the Isra Ona, and that means cheating or misleading a buyer. And there are two fundamental ways, different ways in which the buyer is cheated. One way is when he pays more than the market value. That's called overcharging. Now keep in mind that Ona works in two directions, because if the buyer underpays and the seller claims Ona because he received less than the market value, the true value of the object, he also has a claim of Ona. And again, Ona in the case of overcharging or underpaying fits into three categories, which is a whole shiur unto itself. There's what's called pachos mishtus, if it's less than 1/6 of the value. If it's shtus, it's exactly a ratio of 1/6, or if it's yoser mishtus. But let's assume, just for this shiur today, that it's more than a shtus. So for example, if I sell you something that on the market value is worth, let's say, it's worth less than 6, okay, and I charge you 7 plus, so the 7 and change is much more than a sixth of its value, which is a little less than a sixth. Oh, so here's the issue, Yechiel. The issue is that the buyer, let's say in this case, again, it could go both directions, but in the case where he was overcharged, the buyer was, pardon the phrase, sucked into the deal, meaning he was totally naive of the market value. Now, it could be in other legal systems, that's his problem. But in the halachic legal system, he's not held liable or responsible for knowing and being aware of the exact precise market value.
Sanctions stupidity.
In that sense, yeah. Well, I'll tell you why, because, Yechiel, we live in a much more sophisticated, you know, economic society where, you know, it's a cinch. It's an easy matter of evaluating what is the market value. But back in the day, that was pretty complicated. It was not crystal clear what the market value was. You needed what's called an expert, which is a bucky, to evaluate. It's a little similar to an insurance claim. You know, we have to bring in the adjuster. So there are people who, you know, that's their field, that's their spets, you know. That's what their expertise is. They know. So in any event, again, this is a whole shiur, not for us today, because we want to study a different category of Ona. That's what we want to discuss today. So again, in the first category of Ona, we give the buyer a certain limited amount of time, which is evaluated in every situation by how long it would take him to get a hold of a bucky, an expert, and find out exactly what the market value is.
He can't do that before he makes the purchase?
He's not obligated to do so. Obviously, life would have been a lot easier had he done so, but we don't obligate him to do so. So in that case, let's say a day went by, a week went by, he had plenty of time to clarify and to establish that he was paying the fair price. He didn't come forward with any claim. Then he's out. He has no claim. But within that period of time where he goes to a bucky, well, let's say he has a relative who might have an intelligent evaluation of the object, then he can claim Ona. Which means that, again, if it's more than 1/6 of an overcharge in relationship to the market value, he can get his money back. He's out of here. I want my money back. Okay, now we go to category number 2. This is what's going to occupy our minds today. This is called a pagam or a mum. Those are synonymous terms. Meaning now we're talking about not the market value, but the object itself. The object itself is not in good shape. He discovers, again, we'll get into this, just give me 2 minutes to, so you'll hear the picture. He finds out, to his chagrin, that there's a blemish, there's something that's not, you know, you buy, I always give the example of used cars. You know, today again, you know, again, there are contractual agreements and you sign a thing and you take it for a spin and you show it to this. But again, back in the old days, it wasn't so sophisticated and legalized. So we're talking about a sort of an open situation. So in an open situation where there were no stipulations in the contract or in the verbal agreement, lo and behold, the buyer discovers that there's a blemish in the object. There's something that is called a mum, and he wants to back out of the deal. Here, the halacha changes. In this case, barring two exceptions, which we're going to get into, the buyer has unlimited amount of time. He can come back a year and 10 years and find out that, to his surprise, the object is not what he bargained for, that there's something deficient, a defect in the object, and he was unaware of it. Okay. What are the two exceptions to this rule? Under what circumstances does the buyer have no right to claim, well, I naively bought this object, I didn't check it out, now, lo and behold, I found out that it has a mum, it has a blemish.
This reminds me of the line of Fiddler on the Roof, he sold him a horse, and he
delivered
a
cow,
a mule.
Horse, mule.
That would be a okay. mule. He thought you're getting a horse, and he sold you a mule.
The first exception to the rule is where we have clear-cut reason to believe that the buyer was aware of the mum and he said nothing. That means that he tacitly accepted the object as is, knowing full well that it has a blemish. Now, what constitutes clear-cut evidence? You know, who can go into the mindset of the buyer and know that he was aware of the blemish? That's what we're going to discuss today. What kind of evidence is going to tip the scale in favor of the claim of the seller that the buyer was aware of the blemish and nevertheless he accepted the deal? That's exception number one. Exception number two is the following. What happens if the buyer went ahead and he used the object? That's called hishtamish bo. Now here's the deal. As long as I haven't used the object that I bought, I can still claim I don't want this because this is not what I expected, this is not what I anticipated, it's not up to par. There's a blemish, there's a mum, there's a pagam, there's a defect. But the buyer has to realize the following, that once he uses the object, then he's crossed the red line. Why? Let's understand. There are two sets of halachas, that two dimensions of halacha that determine purchases. One is the laws of onah, meaning I want to get out of this deal, you overcharged me, etc., etc. Then there's another set of halachas that determine an impact on buying and selling, and that's called gzela. Gzela means when I take your object and I use it for my own purposes. Now, if the buyer has not yet touched the object, I don't mean that literally, but I mean he hasn't used it, then he can always claim there's no law of gzela. I didn't steal your object, you gave it to me, I paid you for it, I didn't abscond with your object, there's nothing illegal. Okay, that's fine. And if we can assume that he was unaware of the blemish, then he can back out of the deal. However, he has to realize, this buyer, that he's at a very sensitive crossroads when he gets to the point that he wants to use the object. Imagine I buy a pair of shoes. As long as I haven't worn the shoes, I can come back and say, this is not the size I ordered. I ordered size 8 and you gave me size 7 and so forth and so on. Or there's a scratch on the shoes, whatever he claims. But the very moment he wears the shoes, then it becomes gzela. What do I mean? He can no longer claim that we're in the concept of buying and selling. Is the deal on? Is it off? I want to back out of the deal. No. Once he uses the object, he's making an absolute claim. It's almost a declaration that this object is mine. Because if it's not mine, and I use the object, then I'm a no good Goslin. And the assumption is, again, we'll see what happens if we get to an ignorant person, a Jew who wasn't learned and he didn't know this law. But the assumption is, right now, that every Jew realizes that to use the object that's not his constitutes gzela. And therefore, he's not going to cross that red line and use the object unless he is absolutely satisfied with the purchase, no backs. And at this point, he has made, in effect, a tacit declaration that the deal is final. So again, the two exceptions to the rule. The rule was that a person who buys an object has an indefinite infinite right to come a year later or 10 years later and say, what's going on over here? This is what you sold me. It's got a defect. It's got a blemish. All of a sudden, unbeknown to me, I discovered that there's a scratch on this object. However, the exceptions are, number one, if we have reason to believe that he was aware of the blemish, and nevertheless he went through with the deal. And exception number two is, at the critical moment that he used the object. So let's take a look now on page one of the Mar Makomos page, and we want to see some of this inside. Okay, then, so that was just sort of an introduction.
It's possible that you buy something and you find the defect after you started using it. For instance, the pair of shoes, you started using them, and the heel fell off because it wasn't attached properly.
Correct. But let's take the following case. Let's say, for example, I'm buying produce from you. Let's say I'm buying fruits. So usually what the buyer has to do, and that's what the seller agrees, is to taste some of the fruits. The classical example in Shas is Yayin. Why is wine such a relevant case?
It's prevalent society.
Not only that, but wine, back in the day at least, you know, now we have different methods of avoiding this, but back in the day, wine tends lachmitz. Right. It becomes vinegar. It gets fermented and sour. When you buy wine, you must check out and determine at what level the wine is at. Is it tasty? You have to smell the wine, and then you know. What happens if the buyer purchased the wine, he purchased produce, and he didn't go ahead and taste it, he didn't do that trial run that we would say if you buy a car, especially a used car, you know, go for a spin, we say. Why? Because you have to determine whether or not it's okay. And he failed to do so. At what point do we say to the buyer that you should have been aware of the blemish? The fault is yours for not checking it out. At what point, as Erwin said before, can we say no? The buyer is not at fault at all. He had every reason to assume, one of the cases we're going to come up with is where the mocher told him that it's in perfect shape and there's no blemish. And then we turn to the buyer and say, why didn't you check it out? He says, I relied on the mocher. He's an honest to goodness guy. I didn't think that there was a blemish. So in every single case, in every scenario, we're going to see many scenarios, we have to balance between the claim of the seller and the claim of the buyer. The claim of the seller is always going to be either A, why didn't you back out of the deal from the get-go? You should have known there was a blemish. And then the burden of proof is on the seller to prove that the buyer was aware of the blemish. Or the seller can have a counterclaim, another claim, an alternative claim, and say, why didn't you use my object? And we're going to see that the halacha is going to change based on society. For example, if you buy something that's manufactured, that's sold in a big store, then what happens is, if you return the object, the store is not going to resell the object. They put it out in a special section over there. They don't resell it. That becomes a little bit different than it was back in the time of Chazal, back in the time of the Gemara. Because back in the time of Chazal, even if you used an object, it could still be resold as long as it wasn't soiled, it doesn't look old or used. Today, in most situations, not at all, there's an automatic, absolute assumption that it's not going to be resold. And therefore, the fact that he went ahead and used the object maybe is different today than it was then. So again, so the seller is claiming, number one, why didn't you check it out? Or alternatively, you were aware of it. And the buyer is going to claim, well, I relied on you, or I didn't get a chance to check it out. It was sitting, you know, and I didn't touch it. And now after a year, after 10 years, I took it out of the closet. I looked at it, I used it, and I found it to be blemished. So all this begins with a Mishnah in Perek HaZov. And that's the Perek in Shas, at the top of your page 1, which addresses the Sugya of Odnah and our Parsha here in Bahar. And the Mishnah establishes that if the seller overcharged the buyer by more than a sixth of its value, then the seller has to return the money and the buyer has to return the object. Fine. That's number one. Now, that's the case where, as we said in the first category, the buyer was overcharged. Now we get to the second category. Not that the buyer was overcharged, the price was fair, but the object was faulty, was defective. That's also a sugya in Perek HaZov. And the Gemara says the following. Hecha dezovin inish midei liachas mani gloyli deispei muma. A person purchased something and then time passed and he found out to his chagrin that there is a blemish in the object. So the Gemara says that in this case, the shehia, the fact that time period elapsed, is not relevant. It's not like the case in the Mishnah. Let's go back to the Mishnah, the case where the buyer was overcharged. There the Mishnah says, ad kidei sheyira letagar o lekrovo. We give him a very specific, limited amount of time to claim that he was overcharged. As soon as he has the first opportune moment to go to an expert, and the expert would tell him, what's the market value? After that time period elapses, the sale is irreversible. Except if he claims that there's a pagam, there's a blemish. In such a case, he gloy milsa de ispe muma, he finds out to his surprise that there's a mum in the object, there's a defect. He said, the Gemara says, lo amrina b'chai gavna, in such a case, we don't apply the rule of shah, of the fact that he had enough time to show it to a tagar or to krovo. He had every reason to assume that A, the price is right, and after that period of time passed, that's irreversible, there's no claim. And not only that, he had every reason to assume this buyer that there was no mum in the object. So he puts it wherever he puts it, he takes it out of the closet whenever he does so, and he has a claim of mum. Now what is the nature of the claim of mum? So the Gemara says, Aval gabi mumin mekach tosu. Now here the Gemara uses not the term ona, because that's a very specific term that refers to overcharging or underpaying. Now we're not dealing with the price. The price is right. It's accurate. It reflects the market value. But mekachtos. Mekachtos means that this is such a fundamental change in the object that I expected and that I ordered that I didn't buy this object. This is not the same object. That's called tos. Tos means that there was a basic mistake. There was an error in judgment. And that's called das makna, or das kona. I think we've discussed this in the past, that every kinyan is based on das. Das means that I want to sell it. Das means I want to buy it. But this is not what I wanted to buy. This is not what I bargained for. So here there's no limit in time. Comes along the Rambam in Hilchas Mechira Perek Tezvav, with the exception to the rule. He writes, V'chein ha-mocher l'chavero karka, O Evet, O Behema, O Shar Metaltalin, V'nimtzo b'mekach mum, Shelo yodebo alokeach, the lokeach was unaware of this mum, Machziro afilu li'achar kamashonim. This is not the halach of Ono, where he's limited in time, Ad kidei she'ira l'tagor, no, afilu li'achar kamashonim, there's no limit in time. Why? Sheze mekach tozu. Why should you limit him in time when he finally finds out that, like you say before, Yechiel, horse, mule? Fine. But then the Rambam adds the following. Vehu, when does that halacha apply? Shelo yishtamesh b'mekach achar sheyoda b'mum. He did not use the object for his purposes. He didn't ride this horse after he knew that he had a mum in it. Aval im nishtamish bo achar sheroa hamum, hareze mochal v'eino yochel lahachzir. Okay. So now the Rambam introduces the term mechila. Now what mechila means, I can't give you an object through mechila. That's called hakna. If I want to transfer ownership that I own something to you, mechila, I can't be mochel it to you. Mochel means something abstract. Let's say, for example, I have rights. I have abstract rights. I can be mochel, I can waive my rights. So, for example, in our case, the buyer has rights to claim mekachtos. Says the Rambam, with regard to those rights, there's a concept called mechila. Mechila means, you know what? I give up on my rights. I'm willing to forfeit my rights. And once he forfeits his rights, that's irreversible. Those rights are gone. Now, in the case of mekachtos, the halacha builds in to every single sale rights for the buyer to claim mekachtos. If he could prove that this is not what he was hoping to purchase, then when he has the schus, he has the rights to undo the mekach.
But only if he didn't use the item.
Oh, but says the Rambam, once he uses the object, that's called mechila. Mechila means I waive my rights to claim mekachtos. Now it's very interesting. If you read the Rambam carefully, the Rambam says, "Vehu shelo yishtamesh b'mekach." What are the next three words? Achar sheyoda b'mum. The Rambam is describing a two-stage process chronologically. First, he knows about the mum. That's called raw b'mum, and then hishtamesh b'chefetz. Right? He uses the object. Now, comes along the Mishnah Lemelech, which I think you'll see below the Rambam, and he says the following. This is the Chiddush of the Mishnah Lemelech. He says, okay, let's just see. The Mishnah, there are a lot of Chiddushim here in the Mishnah Lemelech. We want to focus on one particular Chiddush. Let's see if I could find it for you. He says the following. Okay. He says that the Rambam is claiming that he saw the object and he used the object. What happened when he saw the object? He discovered the mum. And yet, the Rambam says that itself is not mechila. What clinches the mechila and activates it? When he uses the object, not when he becomes aware of the mum. Says the Mishnah Lemelech, we see from this a tremendous chiddush of the Rambam. We're going to have to try to figure out why the Rambam came up with this chiddush, but the Rambam holds that awareness of the mum is not a mechila. It's only the first stage in a process, but the clincher of that mechila in that process is when he uses the object.
That makes sense, because being aware of the mum, then I have a choice. Either I decide to
be mochel,
or I decide to use it.
Excellent. So that's the Mishnah Lemelech's claim. At this point, when he becomes aware of the blemish, we don't expect him to immediately run back to the mocher and say, this is not what I want. We give him a choice. At this point, he can decide. The ball is in his court. Does he want to accept the mekach? Does he not want to accept the mekach? And how do we see demonstrate and concretize his decision? How do we know that he's decided to accept the mekach as is? The fact that he used it. Because he wouldn't want to be over gzela. And this Mishnah Melech engenders a whole literature. And basically, he was rejected. Because even though, we'll get back to the reading of the Rambam, the Mishnah Melech seems to be the accurate interpretation of the language of the Rambam, it makes no sense. Why? Because the entire halacha of mechila, or lack of mechila, meaning all the rights that we grant to the buyer endlessly, you know, for the end of time, he can come and claim mekachtos, that's all predicated on the fact that ein lo yedia. He's not aware of the mum. You remember that in the case of overcharging, we assume that if we give him a certain amount of time, right, Kadesha Yirenu Litagor, that's the amount of time that we give until he finds out that he was overcharged. Once that time period goes by, he can no longer say, well, I naively went into this purchase. The same thing should apply in the case of mum, that if a certain period of time passes by, we have reason to believe that he was aware of the mum. As long as he's not aware of the mum, you know, he stashed it, you know, he put it in his closet and he never used the object, he never investigated it. Again, except for other situations where we expect him to investigate. But if he wasn't required to investigate it, he wasn't aware of the mum, so that he still has rights to claim Mekach Tos. But what happens when he becomes aware of the Mu'? So we'll soon see that Pisrei Tshuva and all the Achronim reject this Mishnah Melech, and they say if he's aware of the Mu'm, at that moment, he has to decide whether he wants it or
not.
Immediately. The Mishnah Melech says no. That the Rambam means to say that the fact that he's aware of the Mu'm, that doesn't obligate him, or shall we say that doesn't remove from him and undermine his rights to claim Mekach Tos. It's not enough that he's aware of the Mu'm. The awareness of the Mu'm creates a suffix in our minds. We're in doubt. We don't know if he accepted it or he didn't accept it. When do we finally conclude and tip the scale that he did accept the Mu'm? That's only when he uses the object. So we have a basic machlokas here between the Mishnah Melech and the Pisrei Tshuva, the name of many achronim, the Shvus Yaakov and Rabbi Yaakov Reischer. I mean, these were all gedolim 3 centuries ago. Keep in mind, the Mishnah Melech is almost 4 centuries ago. He wasn't that long after the Machaber. His name was Rabbi Yaakov Roznas. He was a Sfaradi. He wore a turban. And he was of the opinion, no, the awareness of the buyer's awareness of the blemish is not enough to create mechila. It just puts us into a situation of either or. And now he has 2 alternatives. He can decide, this buyer, whether he wants it or he doesn't. As soon as he uses the object, then he demonstrates that he wants to accept the object. That's called mechila. Now, I would like to suggest the following. Let's raise a fundamental question. I think maybe this would put things into perspective. When we say that the buyer has a right to nullify and cancel the deal because of Mekach Tos, what are we saying exactly? Are we saying that every Mekach, every sale, has a certain built-in suffix to it? There's a certain doubt. It's not yet absolute and complete. It's what we call in halachic terms a tenai. I can enter into any sort of transaction with you and place a condition in the transaction. Until that condition is fulfilled, the sale or the transaction is, shall we say, up in the air. It's not yet validated. We need to validate the transaction. Or do we say no? The transaction itself is absolutely valid. What we need is someone to come forward and exercise his rights to cancel and negate the sale, to undermine and invalidate the sale. So again, the first way we're understanding it is like a tenai. Let's apply it here in our case. Are we saying, A, tenai, that when I sell you something, the sale is not yet clinched? It's mitlatoli v'avir, and it depends upon the following kiyuma tenai, and that's going to be when you finally accept the mekach as is. The accepting of the Mekach is the absolute approval, which comes who knows when. It may come way later after the sale, the object was transferred over to the buyer already paid his money. Much later, the Tanai is going to be fulfilled, and in effect, the buyer makes a declaration, I accept this, and it's hereby irreversible. Or do we say no? The sale is valid. The price was right. I gave you the object, you took it into your rishus, you did a kinyan mashiach, adbo, whatever it might be, and you paid the most for it. Ella, the Torah says that we're going to give you a right, as a buyer, to somehow invalidate the kinyan. How could that be? If the kinyan is chal, how do you invalidate it? It's a special schus, a special right that's granted to every buyer, that he can back out of the deal and renege through the channel of Mekach Tos. So what's going to be the nafkamina, the difference between these two definitions? Is it a tenai, or is it a zchus to break up the mekach and claim mekach tos? I think the nafkamina might be the following. If we assume that we have the halachas of tenai, then let's ask ourselves, at what point is that tenai fulfilled? At what point do we say that the buyer accepted the Mekach? This is what the Shvus Yaakov says. The Shvus Yaakov claims that the very moment the buyer becomes aware of the blemish, he now has a fulfillment. He now has fulfilled the Tanai. The Tanai was that as long as the buyer is unaware of the blemish, he has rights to claim, I don't want to prove, I don't want to accept this Mekach. The very split second, says the Shmos Yaakov, that the buyer is aware of the blemish, at that moment, if he says nothing, then Shtika Kol Da'adami, so to speak, and what he does is he's Mekayim the Tanai. The key, it's almost as if I say the following. You know what? I'm online, and when I come to the head of the line, and the seller presents the object at the head of the line, the seller at that point accepts and approves of the Mecca. That's the key of my Tanai. When he gets to the head of the line, he looks at the object, he investigates it, he scrutinizes it, he sees it's fine. I'm on board. Just that maybe there was a hidden blemish. Well, as soon as you become aware of the hidden blemish, then the Tanai is fulfilled. What do we say? No. What we're going to say is that what we need on the part of the buyer is that he gives up, he forfeits his rights to invalidate the deal. He is given a schus, bittel mekach, through the halach of mekach tos. And now we need that he demonstrates that he waives that right. W-A-I-V-E, right? What's that called in halachic terms when I waive a right? That's not called tonight. That's called what? Mechil, exactly. Let's look at the Rambam. Does the Rambam say that the buyer has to accept the mekach, which means lekablo? Or does the Rambam say, no, he was mochel on the mekach? He doesn't have to accept the mekach. The mekach is valid in and of itself. He has rights to undo and undermine the mekach, but he can waive those rights through what's called mechila. Which terminology, if we're careful about it, does the Rambam use?
Moichel.
Ah, if the Rambam is talking about mechila, then what we need is some sort of act of mechila that demonstrates his mechila, says the Mishnah Lamelech, the very moment he uses the object, that's called mechila. The sale itself is valid, but we grant the right, in Hebrew we'd say, anachnu manikim lo lalokeach, schut. We give him a special, we bestow upon him a special right to cancel the deal and claim Mekach Tos and undermine and invalidate it. However, he can be mochel on that zchut. Ah, he can be mochel on that zchut. Where's the mechila? You can't. Mechila has to work in one of two ways. Either verbally, an oral statement, ich bin mochel, I mochel you, or alternatively, some sort of action. The action that demonstrates clearly mechila. Says the Mishnah Melech, at what point did he demonstrate Mechila? At the point to which he used the object. Even though you may claim, well, the Lokech already saw the object. Okay, he saw the object. He wasn't yet Mochel. He still wants to reserve for himself a right to cancel and invalidate the Mecca. That's point number one in the Mishnah Melech. Now the Mishnah Melech says another Chiddush. Not only does the Mishnah Melech claim that we're going to extend the rights of the buyer to claim Mekach Tos up until Shimush, until he uses the object, but he says something else. He says that what happens if the buyer has not paid for the object yet? That's called in Hebrew Hakafa. To buy on credit.
Hakafa.
Yeah, hey, kuf, pay, hey. Lahakif, meaning I'm going to circumvent the payment itself. You, as a seller, will be willing to enter into this deal, even though you haven't been paid. Now, again, exactly how that works is very complicated because we paskim that Mos Konos, on a Daraisa level, we need Mos. But the Rabbanon instituted a new Kenyan, and they said, we're not going to rely on Mos. This is my focus, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. We're going to require a Kenyan Yad, which means Mashiach HaGbah Mesira, where you take the object. But the question is, did the Rabbanon now say that Mashiach HaGbah is an absolute Kenyan, even if there were no Mos? Says the Mishnah Lamelech that if the Lokech hasn't yet paid his Mos, then he has a right to delay and extend his claim of Mekach Tos. In other words, it goes beyond normal. Normally we would say, well, at some point we think that the lokeach was aware of the mum, of the blemish. We gave him a chance, to decide that he wants to invalidate the mekach and call it a mekach tos. We might even extend it until he uses the object. But once he uses the object, then says the Mishnah Melech, that's an irreversible absolute kinyan. However, if he hasn't paid for it yet, then in his mind, in the lokeach's mind, he is still wondering whether or not he wants to pay for the object. What he has the ability to do is to extend his rights to claim mekachtos. Let's see it inside. He says, Nira b'ena. Again, you're on the bottom of page 1. She'im hoya mekach behakofas hamos. In other words, the lokeach, the buyer, is still holding on to the money of the sale. Yesh lomar demishum hachi, therefore lo hikpid halokeach linasoso. What is the next word?
Yeah.
Linasoso? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Linasoso. Yeah. Okay, it didn't come out so clearly on this printing. Miyad uliolam lo machil. He says the following, that we don't view this as an absolute kinyan until the point in which the lokeach pays the money.
Wait a second. The guy uses the object. He can still be moichel?
I don't know. The Mishnah Melech doesn't spell out that point.
Well, so it sounds like. He's saying he's selling it for this. You're assuming he's even used it. Because if he didn't use it, then what's the extent? You don't
right.
extend.
Right. Right. Correct. According to the Mishnah Melech, second chiddush that we spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
That's going to come up a little later in this paragraph. He says that according to the Rambam, it's up until, even beyond his awareness of the blemish,
right,
up until the front.
Specifically, until he uses it, no matter
till what. Until he uses it, correct.
So he extends until he pays back some money. So if you buy something with a Visa transaction from a year, you can still claim that because you're using it. Because Visa doesn't get paid until like a month, well, he gets paid right away, but whatever.
Okay, so let me come back to that point, David, in a minute. Let me go Keseder here. The first discussion that I want to mention to you is, why is it that with regard to overcharging, we only give him a limited amount of time, Kadeshi Arena Litagar, whereas with regard to a blemish, we give him an extended period of time. So again, if you have these pages, if you take a look on page 10, okay. Now, let me just tell you about a certain sefer here, which is a contemporary author. His name is Rabbi Yitzchak Rosenblatt. He's a mutz. He's a Moritz Tzedek in the Eidei Charedis in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yitzchak Rosenblatt. And he wrote a sefer all on the laws of Onah. It's called Hilchos Onah. And if you take a look in the paragraph, which is the third paragraph that starts with Tam Achiluk, he says that we give the buyer a little bit of time to figure out exactly what the market value is. Kasha l'shara shivu yamiduyok. It's very difficult to expect every buyer to know exactly what the... He goes into a shop, he doesn't know what the market... L'chein darko shalakona levarer. We assume that the buyer is going to make a birur, he's going to check out and go to an expert, but we give him a certain amount of time to do so. And kisha over azman, then we assume if the time period passed, then the kone came to the conclusion that he paid the accurate and fair market price. Masha ein kein kishiyesh pagam ba mekach. He says nechshav ze kigzela mamish. Again, this is not the gzela that I spoke about before when the lokeach uses the object. This is the gzela on the part of the mocher, because again, in mekach tos, the sale is invalid. He had no rights to take the money of the lokeach. He's holding on illegally to the money of the lokeach. That's called gzela. And he says, with regard to claims of gzela, there's no limit of time. A nigzal, who is the victim of theft, always has unlimited rights to come back and sue the Gazlan for payment. So that's number one. Now, number two, the Magid Mishnah, back on page 1, asks the following question. Where did the Rambam get this from? One second. What was the source of the Rambam that there's a concept called Mechila? In other words, once the buyer becomes aware of the blemish, then at that point he's mocha. Where did the Rambam get that from? Says the Magid Mishnah, that's a Gemara in Ksubas. Very interesting. The Gemara says that if a man marries a woman and he discovers to his surprise, to his disappointment, that she has a mum, which was, let's say, something that he couldn't be aware of, it was in a part of the body that was covered, then he doesn't have to pay the ksuba, and he can claim ekartos. Again, you have to know what mumim are. For that, you have to be a bucky in the irons, in daf ayin hay, and so forth in ksubas. But that only applies, and the Gemara uses a modest term here, you know, hiding the truth, so to speak. And the Gemara says that's only imlo shasa meakos. He didn't drink yet from the cup. That's a euphemism for the fact that he didn't have a relationship with her. Once he has a relationship with her, then we assume that he wants to
get married.
He culminates the marriage, and according to the Magid Mishnah, just like we have a concept called Chazaka, she'ein adam shosa b'kos, elim kein bodko. We assume he checked her out, and when he consummated the marriage, he accepted her as such, and therefore he has to pay the ksuba if he wants the divorce, and so forth and so on. The marriage is valid. So too, says the Magid Mishnah in sales, there's also halacha of chazok einan adam shosa meakos elim kein bodko. So therefore the Magid Mishnah assumes that if a person uses the object, it means he's already checked it out and he's convinced that there's no blemish and he wants to accept.
That's the Rambam says, right?
And that's how he interprets the Rambam. But what does the Magid Mishnah add to our discussion? Yeah. He puts it in a broader context. Where did the Rambam get this from? Because the sugi that we started with in Perek HaZov of Mekartos, that says that there's no limit to how much time he can claim Mekartos, the sugi doesn't explain anything about Mechila. Anything about, well, he used the object already and therefore he forfeited his right to claim Mekartos. Where did that come from? Where did the Rambam get it from? Says the Magid Mishnah, he took it from Ksubas. Now, there's a very interesting discussion on page 9.
That might be a different type of thing, though, because he's using Russian Chazaka, that a person wouldn't. I mean, there's many situations, right, where a person might use something. He buys a piece of machinery or something like that, and he's only using the things that he thinks he needs, and then later discovers that there's other stuff that is dysfunctional or has a defect.
So Yudi, maybe your case is the following, which we're going to cover.
He uses the Magid Mishnah, uses Lashon Chazaka, that a person wouldn't.
Maybe this would be a case in point. The Gemara talks about, let's say you buy, the Poskim I should say, talk about, let's say you buy certain volumes of produce, and they come in different boxes. And he opened up one box, and even though it was a little bit spoiled, he decided, nevertheless, he's going to enjoy it, and he serves it at his dinner table. And now the question is, okay, the fact that he served it at his dinner table indicates this chazaka, but maybe only with regard to part of the mekach. He didn't check out the other boxes. Do we assume that this chazaka applies to the other box? So, with regard to the first box, the fact that he's using it means it finds favor in his eyes. You know, it passes the minimum standard, and he's willing to accept it. But that doesn't mean necessarily that he accepted the other boxes. And then, for another example of Yudi's case, would be what happened if the mocher told him, and I mentioned this at the beginning of the shiur, that it's in perfect shape. You know, I can guarantee you there are no blemishes. In such a case, you don't apply this chazaka. You don't assume that he should have checked it out before he used it. What do you mean he should have checked it out before he used it? He had every reason in the world to rely on the word of the mocher. So all this business about the Magid Mishnah's chazaka, that the fact that he used it proves that he checked it out and he was aware of the blemish, that only applies in certain circumstances. It's not an absolute rule. There are many cases in which he went ahead and he used it because he had reason to believe that it was in perfect shape. There was no havamin in his mind. So the poskim say, with regard to wine that I mentioned to you before, since wine has a tendency of spoiling and becoming vinegar, and there are full sugyas here. I don't know if anyone here is learning daf yomi. Yeah? So you remember, David, the sugyas of...
You pay one coin at a time.
One coin at a time?
No, if you buy 30 units of wine, you pay one coin at a time over a period of time. The question is, the sales invalidated Only when you pay a 30th coin, right?
Right. No, I was referring to a different sugya. Oh. You're talking when he pays the 30th coin. I was talking about a different sugya. There's a sugya in Baba Basra in which the lokeh finds that the wine is vinegar.
Right.
And the question is, was it already spoiling? Right. Did the spoilage process begin before the mechira took place? If the mocha could prove that I sold you perfectly good wine, it was in your barrel for X amount of time, and then it became vinegar, then the buyer is out.
Yeah.
So the Gemara has a bdika, you know, 3 days this way, 72 hours, you know, it takes a while till it got spoiled. If the sale was only 2 days ago and now it's already spoiling, the mocher was selling him already damaged goods and so forth and so on. So that's as far as wine is concerned. Now, in the case of wine, there's an absolute assumption that the lokeach is going to check out the wine because he knows that wine spoils. But let's say I go to a department store, right? And I purchase a shirt. You know, where is it here? They have Costco, right? So I buy this, what's it called, Kirkland shirts. Yeah. So I have every reason to assume that the shirt has been checked out and it's in perfectly good shape. Yeah. So you can't claim, well, why didn't you test it out beforehand? So in such a case, you know, I may have left the shirt in its original packaging for a year or 2 years or 10 years, and then I open it up, and lo and behold, you know, there's a button missing, or there's the threads coming out, whatever. And these things happen. There are defects, even in our modern-day manufacturing. There, you cannot claim that the lokeach had a chazaka that when he put on the shirt, he must have checked it out. He didn't even bother checking it out. He was in a rush to get to the chasana, took out a new shirt, put it on. He was a scholar in residence, you know, in Clanton Park, so he didn't have time. You know, my wife gave me a new shirt for this shop. So it's a shame. I'm going to make a shechiyon because I hold the first part of speech. Okay, anyway, so I'm not going to check out the shirt. You know, it's from a reliable, you know, company that has a certain reputation to it. I'm going to put on the shirt. It could take me, a guy like me, you know, the third till, till I figure out that it's got a pagam.
Yeah.
There are other situations, as I mentioned before, with regard to produce, that it's absolutely assumed that before you buy the produce, you taste it. But what happens if there's a great tircha involved in checking something out? Like, for example, if I buy a used car. So in that case, it doesn't mean beans, you know, to go around and take a spin. But if I want to check out the inner kishkes of the car, and I'm not talking about a case where the, you know, there's a contract agreement, because again, that changes the whole picture, but if there's no contract agreement, I don't know if I'm going to go to an expert and pay him, I don't know what they call it, $100, you know, to check the chassis and make sure everything is...
Yeah, you should.
You should, but you're not required to do so in halachic terms. Again, Yechiel, you and I see it from the perspective of used car dealers in our time. You know, a used car dealer is going to say to you, look, it may be a lemon, you know. You know that a lot of cars that you sell are going to fall apart. It's, you know, the burden is you either accept the deal as is or you don't.
Well, when Yenin was purchasing the horse, he should have taken the horse doctor and checked that it's a horse.
To an expert, yeah. Right. You remind me of the famous story of a rav in a community that found out that one of the balabatim, when he came home with a chicken, found a needle in the chicken. So his wife says to him, take it to the rav. Let him paskin. Is it a treif or not? She said, no. Let me look at it. So this amaretz, you know, he looks at the chicken. He looks at the thing back and forth. He says, okay, we'll eat the chicken. Somehow the word got around that this amaretz paskins on treifus. So the rav came to visit him. This amaretz was a horse dealer. And when the Amoritz heard that the Rav was coming, he goes out of his house and he finds him checking the horse. And he's looking at the teeth and so he says to him, Rebbe, since when did you become an expert on horses? He says, since you became an expert on looking at chickens and signing a bet trade for you. Okay, so if you take a look at page 9, on the bottom of page 9, on the top, excuse me, of page 9, we have a very interesting analysis here from Rav Osher Zelig Weiss. You're all familiar with Rav Osher Zelig.
Yeah.
And he wants to know how these halachas apply in our day with regard to manufactured goods. And he goes through the following. He says, first of all, if he's kone chefetz miyodim prati, if he buys an object from a private seller, he doesn't have a chanut, you know, he says that it's very possible that if the object was not yet used and it has a blemish, the seller might be able to be metaken the blemish and resell it, and therefore the seller wants the object back. If the buyer went ahead and used the object, now the seller will not be able to resell it. It's already used goods. And in such a case, clearly the Rama would apply even in our time that once the buyer uses the object, that's called a mechila. However, he says that in cases in which the seller is not going to reuse the object, even if it's brand new and it hasn't been used, or even if it's been used and it's used goods, in any event, the seller is a manufacturer. He has a tremendous, supermarket chain. That's the policy of the store, is that in returns they don't resell it. You know, there are stores today where even returned goods are sold at a cheaper price. They slash the price, like damaged goods and stuff.
Open box stuff too.
Do they have it here in Canada?
Yeah.
Which place? Winners or? But I don't know. There's certain stores that they have where you can actually pay less than half of the value, and sometimes you get a good deal. You know, a yid likes a good deal, so.
It's sold as is,
correct. Because again, it's been used and it's sold as is. But there are many manufacturers or supermarkets, not supermarkets, what do they call them? Department stores, that once it's been used, they're not going to resell it. So in such a case, Rav Weiss claims that this Rambam is based on the laws of Gzela, that once the buyer uses the object in such a way that now the seller can no longer sell it because it's used, says Rav Weiss, well, today, even if he didn't use it, he wouldn't resell it. So the using of it is not Gzela. In other words, the using of it causes no loss to the seller. Okay, that's on page 9. How are we doing on the clock? We still have 2 minutes? Okay, 2 minutes and I'll try to wrap this up.
Wouldn't there be a ninyan of you in a situation...
Just going to get myself some hot water.
Of pagam.
Yeah, listening.
Or moon. There would be also ninyan of oinah. In that case, not that there's basically two cases. Okay, oinah is if you overcharge, that's the classic case of oinah.
Right.
But here, by a case of mum, there's the mum, and there's an inyan of oinah as well, because, there's a mum, and he decides to use it, but it's not, what he sold them, because it had a mum, was not worth the price that he originally sold it for.
That's true.
There will be an inyan of oinah.
Well, we're going even a step further. We're saying that regardless of the price fluctuation, regardless of that, it's gzeila. Now again, if the mocher was unaware of that blemish, then the question is whether that's called gzeila. In any event, just because we have to end, I wanted to add one thing over here. He says that the Magid Mishnah writes, that's also on page 1, that im haya adover shalokech yochel avchino li'altar, if there were situations in which, says the Magid Mishnah, the buyer could have known immediately about the blemish, and he gives various examples, and he says, v'lo hikpid, v'amocher mochelo stam, meaning the mocher didn't tell him it was in great shape, eino chozer. So this is pretty amazing. The Magid Mishnah wants to suggest, and the logic is very compelling. He says that all these ideas that, well, the buyer was unaware of the blemish and therefore give him an extended, infinite amount of time until he claims mekach tos, that all makes sense in most cases, but there are certain cases where we have to assume up front that the buyer was aware of the blemish. It would have been no complicated or tircha gdola, it wouldn't have cost him a nickel, a dime, to check out the mem. And in such a case, he wants to say that the Rambam's view of mechila, that halacha of mechila should apply, and eino chozer. And the Sma'in Shulchan Aruch, which you'll see on the second page, brings down this Magid Mishnah halacha. He says that on what the Shulchan Aruch Lishulchan Aruch copies the Rambam word for word. Avolim nishtamesh bo, if he used the mekach, is harezem mochal. He says, v'hu adin, it also applies even if he didn't, if the buyer did not use the object, in hoya dover shalokech yochel avchino lialter, if it's something that we assume the lokech should have immediately been aware of, right, because he could have tested it out, he could have tasted it, or whatever it is, v'lo hikvid lasos came. So this is going to be your case, Yechiel, of used car dealers, where they say, you know, you've got to check it out, and the requirement and the assumption was that it's the lokech's responsibility to check it out, v'lo hikvid lasos came, is then, as long as the mocher didn't mislead him, is eino chozer. What it means? What does it mean that the mocher didn't mislead him? It means that the mocher didn't tell him explicitly, I checked it out, and I know that the merchandise I'm selling you is perfect. He just sold it to him. If the mocher convinced the lokeach that he, the seller, checked out the object, and it was perfect, then there's no responsibility whatsoever on the shoulders of the lokeach. Therefore, there's an open-ended right of the mocher to be mevatel the mekach. The trouble is that for some reason, which I'm not sure why, the Marashdam, he came from a town in Galicia called Berzhan, has nothing to do with my last name. Okay, he was the Berzhan Rav. And he says that Zeus Faras Yochit, that the Magid Mishnah has not been accepted. That the halacha is up until the moment that the buyer uses the object, he could claim mekach tov. So we're not going to come back and say to the buyer, well, you could have checked it out, you should have checked it out. All that is irrelevant. And the punchline here of this marashdam, which goes way beyond this sugi, this is a universal question, halacha, is what happens if the mocher claims to lokech, you have no rights to claim mekatos here because you should have checked it out. And then the lokech says, no. So the mocher pulls out a Magid Mishnah, and he says, the Magid Mishnah says that if you could have checked it out, you didn't, that's your responsibility. So the lokech claims, no, I paskin like the Shvus Yaakov. So this is a universal issue. When you have a machlokis in poskim, what do we do? So the halacha is that the mocher, in this case, has no right to say kimli, that I know that we paskin like the Magid Mishnah. Why? Because the Marashdam says that this, since the bulk of evidence here is and the opinions of the poskim is against the Magid Mishnah, you know, this is where someone like Rav Avadia Yosef would come in very heavily. You know, if you've ever read any of his tshuvas, you know, he lists for pages and pages, you know, everybody and their uncle, you know, the Rav Pichuch says this, and it's so you never even heard of Pichuch, and he's already calculating how many people accept that opinion. Says the Marashdam, in this case, the mocher can't say kibli. I don't want to pay you back your money, I don't want to return your funds. Why? Because you should have checked it out. Says the Marashdam, no. We don't accept that Magid Mishnah. And it's a Das Yochid, and if it's a Das Yochid, there's no Kimli on a Das Yochid. And it's unbelievable, because usually we say, Amotzi Mechavero, Alvaraya. So in this case, the Lokech wants to get his money back, and the Mocher is enjoying that money. He doesn't want to fork it over. But in this case, says the Marashdam, he's going to have to fork it over, and we don't apply the principle of Amotzi Mechavero, Alvaraya, because the Magid Mishnah is a Das Yochid. All right, we'll stop here. I mean, there's a lot here. We can go on for hours and hours, but this is where we'll stop.